guys get real. You know, real guys talk real sports. We will. Race, market, game changer. About to get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Certain guys, you just got to recognize, I got to pay the money. I got to keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We'll make excuses. We're not going to make excuses. Sometimes you got to create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron's decision.
I do have a bit of a problem with execution. Right?
He burned a lot of bridges. He's going to be hated in Chicago. He's going to be hated in Cleveland. He's going to be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's going to be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them.
All right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. It's your man Marcus, the Game Changer, in here with D. Wills. How are the people?
What's up? It's cold up here in the Midwest. Just a few my way.
Man, it's freezing, Doc. No joke. We left over the weekend. We probably got about, I don't know, a midget's worth of snow. It's pretty wild, man. I spent probably about 3-4 hours shoveling my new driveway. I just bought a house this past March, and it has a significantly bigger driveway than my old place. So your boy will be investing in a snowblower. So any snowblower companies out there that want to get sponsorship, you know what I'm saying, just holler.
Holler at a boy.
For real, because my back was like, yo, man, you need to cut this out. My back ain't felt that way since the Cecil back.
You know, I saw him the other day.
Oh, yeah?
With the other day. Yeah, they won that national championship for semi-pro basketball out of Beloit. So he got him a national championship.
Yeah.
The ladies over there. But, yeah.
Been my favorite coach. Cecil Youngblood, favorite coach, man. Favorite coach.
We're going to have to get him on here to critique some of this stuff. I know he'll come on. We could have him come on and drop some of that knowledge on it.
Yeah, he'll bring it like he always does. We have to get Coach Cecil on, the distinguished one, you know, very distinguished man. We'll have to get him on, and he can grace us with his presence and share his knowledge with our listeners out there. Speaking of listeners out there, again, welcome to Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. This is Renegade Radio. You know, we keep it way real. And if you want to join in the conversation, feel free to call in. The number to call in is 1-347-989-0844. Dial those digits, pull up a chair to the table, and join us as we wrap for the next 2 hours. And just talking sports from a real perspective. You know, we don't pull no punches. We ain't got no alliances with nobody. You know, everything you get from us is coming straight from the cuff, and it's straight real. You know, we ain't got to worry about burning no bridges because them bridges ain't been built yet. We working on them, but they ain't been built yet, so we ain't got to worry about burning them. So we can say what we want to say, basically. As my 4-year-old would say, ain't nobody the boss of us. We can do what we want to do. So, you know, we're going to get into some things. We got a show lined up for y'all. You know, got a lot, wall-to-wall information, stories to talk about, perspectives to drop. So we welcome y'all to join in. D, where you want to take it to start out?
Well, you know, you got the funky editorial. We got to talk about the Heisman. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and cue it up. You know, we have this segment called the Funky Editorial, where we just like to take something, an issue in sports, and really just dig into it and go op-ed, first page of the paper on it, you know what I'm saying, and really dig into it and really connect it to some deeper issues. and really bring it to a global scale. So we're going to go ahead and get into that.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Yes, shall we say it, y'all?
Yes,
Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yes.
Coleman,
yes.
Time, set.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
What you got for us this week, D?
Well, this I want to really talk about the people who did not vote for Cam Newton based on stuff that happened outside the field of play. It's just utterly, I mean, it's one more element that just disturbs me to the sense that some of these folks just have their vote taken away, you know, in the sense that, yeah, the NCAA already signaled that it's okay to consider this young man. You can talk about the process for how they got there, but they clearly signaled. They clearly said this person is eligible not only for the season, but eligible for the Heisman. So you can't say, well, I'm gonna try to, you know, they may come back later on. What if they come back later on and they find out that, again, they reaffirm the idea that he knew nothing, their decision stands. Now, this is a guy that should have had every vote, because if you're talking about clear cut, there was no one ever gave, you know, any kind of saying, well, I could rationalize my decision to choose one of the other people. Everybody agreed that he was the best player. No one ever argued against his performance on the field, but everybody speculated. And this wasn't something that the NCAA didn't answer. They gave you a decision for the moment to allow you to make the kind of decision you need to do. And still have these people saying, well, I'm not going to vote for him. Sniffs of a whole bunch of other stuff that just drives me crazy about what is college football right now. So that one is something that I really want to talk about, this whole idea of the Heisman, and also how the Heisman itself just captures our mind, like how this has even grown to, you know, its own set of brand and its own set of community and society. I mean, the whole thing is throwing me for a little bit, but particularly voters. I posted it on our Facebook page and on our blog. You know, my thoughts on it. You know, and so, you know, let your voices be heard. You know, if you disagree, talk to me about it. Why you wouldn't necessarily vote for Cam Newton, but given that NCAA did what they did to clear his ability to play, they cleared him to play in the national championship game. They cleared him to do all this stuff, which sends a signal that you can vote for him. And if anybody can build a case why somebody else should get the Heisman over Cam Newton, I want to hear it.
Now, excellent take. Now, this is my perspective, and this is kind of how I sit on the issue. For me, it's a bit of a double-edged sword. Like, Cam is in the clear. Cam is in the clear. You vote based upon what happened on the field from this point forward. Now, my thing about Cam being in the clear is a little bit. I think I have a little bit different perspective. Did the NCAA do their due diligence? I don't know. You know me. I don't trust the NCAA at all. I think what they did benefited the student athlete for once, which I think was a good thing because the way the things shook out for once. The student athlete came out on the positive end of the exchange, and that's usually not the case. But I still have to question whether or not the NCAA actually did their due diligence in this. Yeah, they brought in the Fed. Yeah, they did an investigation. But this is the quickest NCAA investigation ever. I have never seen a decision come down so quick from the NCAA. You know, and for me, that makes me a little bit worried. That worries me a little bit. For these reasons. One, I think a decision came down this quick, not because they actually had I don't believe Cam Newton is in the clear beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, again, I don't think that should affect whether or not you vote for him or not. He's in the clear. So you go by what's on the field. I don't think he's in the clear 100% within the shadow of a reasonable doubt. I don't think he is. Because if you look at the way the NCAA worded their release, it was, we don't have enough evidence at this time. And the reason they don't have enough evidence at this time is because they conducted the quickest investigation of a student athlete's eligibility that I can remember And the reason I think they did that is, again, to protect the brand. They got to protect the brand. They got to protect their main horses. And Auburn is a key player in the national championship, and they had to settle this quickly. They had to make a decision one way or the other very quickly. And so because of that, like, I don't think they did their due diligence. I think they did just enough to say, look, we did enough. We couldn't find enough. I think if they dug around a little bit more, they could have found more, you know. But I don't think they did, because they didn't want to, because then what happens? You know, what happens if you do find out that Cam Newton was involved? Now you have another vacated national title. You know, you have another semi-Reggie Bush-type situation. And so I think the NCAA put Cam Newton in a bad situation when it came to this Heisman voting thing, because they left such – it seemed incomplete. It seemed like an incomplete investigation. Now, on the other side of it, Cam Newton is in the clear. The NCAA said he's in the clear. He's eligible. He's not going to be ineligible anytime soon, because this is the last time you're going to see him play in a college uniform. So anything from this point on doesn't matter. He's eligible this season. He had a great season. Vote for the man for the Heisman. If you can't vote for the man for the Heisman, you need to because it's about what happens on the field. I don't care about your brand. I don't care about none of that. To me, and to me, the Heisman is kind of shaky anyway. I don't view it as a very prestigious award, in my opinion. And part of that is because since I've been growing up, you know, I'm turning 30 in a couple of days, actually. And since I've grown up, Heisman winners have Heisman winning quarterbacks in particular, unless it was a running back, the Heisman winner has been suspect at the pro level. So it doesn't seem like a very prestigious award. It almost seems like a code to GMs, like, do not draft this dude. You know what I mean? And so for me, the Heisman has always is never been what it's supposed to be, and I don't feel like it always goes to the best athlete. I don't always feel like it goes to the best player. When Adrian Peterson was, I think he was a freshman or a sophomore, he should have won it, you know, but I think they gave it to some bum quarterback who just happened to be, you know, a senior at that time, and it was like a career achievement award. They wasn't having a good year that year. You know, since then they've loosened up on that and been more open to giving it to underclassmen, but it just seems like there's so much, it's so political as to who gets it and who doesn't. And to me, that's just lame. Give it to the best player. I think Ndamukong Suh should have had a shot at getting it last year. You know?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, that's the problem with the Heisman is that, you know, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, linebackers might be, you know, how you might look at it, it always goes to a running back for the most part, quarterback.
Right.
You know, you had that year when Woodson won it. But, you know, yeah, Suh, I think, was the biggest. It was a great case for Suh to be – he was clearly the most dominant player in college and didn't win it. So, I mean, that, you know, that's why I said I question the Heisman in general, because he's not always the best football player. There are years where it's clearly an offensive lineman is the best player, and they never can win the Heisman, you know, going against any kind of skilled player. There's been years where, you know, an offensive lineman has been the most dominant player in college football and just has never got that kind of respect. So I agree with you on that. But what I would say is, unless you had – the only way you could bring in the NCAA in this voting is if it was very close. So if you can make a case that James was close, or if you can make a case that one of the other quarterbacks, Luck, was close. I mean, those guys put up decent numbers, but it was like, you know, what's the brother that's the Olympic sprinter? You know,
Usain.
It was just like a Usain Bolt type stuff. Like, the race wasn't even close. It, you know, if it was like close to the wire, you say, well, I got to figure out how to separate these two. Then you could say, well, this situation is going to give me the nod the other way. But when it's like a Usain Bolt type situation, then you got to say, it ain't even close. Like, you're going to need a whole bunch of other stuff to make this close. And it for whatever reason, one thing NCAA brought the FBI in, and you know me, but you and I have been around folks and been around different neighborhoods, and you don't take that long to figure out who stole the damn toothbrush. It don't take 3 years to figure that out. You know, when you bring law enforcement in, it don't take that long to figure out whether a cat got money or not. It ain't no secret. You know, this ain't like the most difficult case in the world. It's not like we trying to, you know, track embezzlement funds and that, you know, complicated, you know, Swiss bank accounts. You know, there's a cat with a bag in the back of a Jeep. You know, everybody probably talking about it at the local bar. You know, it ain't that hard to figure it out. Now,
it's not hard to figure it out, but it's hard to get some concrete evidence that says that he knew. Because what you're trying to prove is knowledge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's hard to prove that somebody knows something. Like, if it was like, okay, he walked into the store at 11:59, that can be proved because there's a physical act. Yeah. But when you're talking about a conversation or just knowledge of a situation, it's hard to prove that.
Yeah.
And I don't think they had enough time to build a case to prove that. And so because of the time, because it was a time-sensitive situation given the time that the story came out, I think they just said, look, at this time we ain't got enough to go on. We don't want this story to keep being talked about. Instead of actually talking about what's going on the field, talking about the great game, they're talking about this black cloud is hanging over everything that's going on with this top team in the country, and we don't want that. We want to protect our brand. We want them to be talking about the game. We want to be talking about on-field stuff. We don't want them to be talking about all this extra stuff around the game. So we're going to wrap this up. And if we can find something, we're going to find something. But I guarantee they gave the FBI a timetable. And I don't know if they've ever done that where they're like, look, we need to know within this time frame, because after this point, we're moving forward one way or the other. We're moving on so that, you know, we can have a national championship game without all this other hoopla.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, this is such a, you know, again, the machine, it's you know, feeding the brand and all these different things that it's created. I mean, this is where things slip. You know, when you have this you know, these are the decisions you make when you're trying to protect the money. And that's, you know, that's part of it. And that's why I said, given this hypocrisy that exists throughout this, that everybody talks about, you and I listen to a lot of the, you know, we're fans of sports talk radio, so we listen to a lot of other people. And, you know, we've heard people like Mike Greenberg and others so very open about this hypocrisy. You know, he's a Northwestern grad. That we all clear. And given that that's the case, then vote for who you think is the best. That's why I said it's even more important that they should have got all the votes, because everybody knows that this is crazy. So,
yeah.
Given that the system's crazy, then you just vote for the best player, whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that he should have gotten more votes, he had like 100-some people who didn't vote for him. Everybody who did vote and have his name on the ballot, like 93% of them voted for him. And then 100 people left him off the ballot. How can you leave him off the ballot? You should be shocked.
Yeah, see, I can't clap for that, man.
Yeah,
I can't applaud that. I mean, to me, if he's eligible, he's eligible. At that point, you have to go by what the NCAA has done. You know, whether you thought they did an adequate investigation or not, that's on them. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, if it comes out that Cam Newton, you know, violated NCAA rules in some kind of way, that's on the NCAA to figure out. You know, at this point, the boy is eligible. Vote as such and move on. Like, keep it moving. Like,
He
had the best season, bottom line.
And this part kind of takes us to another twist, but, you know, they had the discussion about whether he knew. And I know a couple people, I think Stuart Scott, some other folks came on to talk about it, the culture of black communities. In fact, you know, you don't ask your parents, especially if he's a reverend, you know, these are things you just don't talk about. You know, like, you don't know how much your family makes. You don't know how much your daddy makes, your mama makes. You just don't ask these questions all the time. And sometimes it is on a need-to-know basis, and sometimes your butt don't need to know. And so the dynamics of culture, so on one side of it, because of where I grew up, you know, it just knowing the kind of struggle around, these are things you don't talk about. You know, you'll come on, Dad. That kind of stuff don't happen in a lot of communities. You ain't having those conversations all the time. And so the whole dynamic of how where culture and race come into this in terms of how, you know, if your father said, this is what you're doing, that's just what you're doing. If your mother said, this is what you're doing, that's just what you're doing in certain cultures. You didn't even ask. If they said, we're going to Auburn, then we're going to Auburn. It's that
right.
If people can't understand that dynamic, it was interesting to hear that kind of, you know, kind of building on this conversation. It was interesting to hear that conversation going up. I don't know if you heard that conversation and people talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for some people, it's hard to believe it. But it's something that I can understand if you've been around it enough to know that, you know, particularly in families, particularly around black preachers, and the dynamics around that, the intimidation, and some of the acting out that he did. You know, we know some of the worst kids are some of the pastor's kids.
Right, right.
God and everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that it was interesting to hear that kind of conversation kind of evolve. And, you know, when it talked about Cam on whether or not he knew or not.
Yeah. And that's really like, whether he took the money or not, I could care less in actuality. I think this is one time where the NCAA, being the NCAA and being in, you know, 24/7 constant pimp mode, actually benefited a student athlete for once in a situation like this. And I don't have no problems with that, but I do see that this happened pretty damn quick. And usually it takes a little bit longer for them to figure these types of things out. And, you know, me being me, man, I'm always skeptical, especially when there's money to be made, as to, you know, why things happen the way they happen. You know, when you can obviously see there was some money to be made by having a quicker decision. And I always feel the NCAA is going to have to make that money if they can.
Well, this is going to be a storyline we've got to continue to follow. And, you know, I just want to bring that up. And, you know, on the Real Sports Guys, we often are trying to get that underbelly of sports and those issues behind the scenes that shape sports and culture. So this is a good thing to talk about. But I also want to bring up, too, that we got a number of hirings, though. A couple of hirings happening in college sport. I know you want to cover that.
Let's get into that. Well, I mean, for one, Urban Meyer stepped down. At first because of family issues, now because of health issues. And I'm looking at my notes from the week, and one thing I wrote down when I first heard that he was stepping down because of family issues, I was like, it's got to be a couple of things that's going to make him leave that job, making as much money as he makes, doing what he does at that program, which is probably one of the two or three best jobs in the country as far as college athletics go, period. I don't care if you're talking about football, basketball, whatever sport. Florida football is one of the best jobs in the country as far as college athletics go, hands down. And so for him to leave that gig, I was like, either he has a child to crack or somebody just got pregnant. You know, you just say random family issues, I'm thinking he got some kids wilding out and he just need to be at home, or it's just getting out of hand, somebody's trying to go to prison, you know. And, you know, sometimes I think we forget that coaches, like coaching is hard on families. It's very hard on families. Like, you know, I coach my daughter's basketball team, and one reason I'm hesitant to even coach a high school level team, you know, is that it takes away a lot, especially if you're into it, especially if you're one of those obsessive people, like Urban Meyer seems to be wired that way, where he seems to obsess over his gig, is that it really sucks you away from your family when you have a family. It really pulls you away, and it's really hard to be active and involved, especially at that level. When you're, you know, coach of Florida or coach at Texas or coach at Oklahoma, your role in your family is very different than it would be otherwise. And so, you know, a lot of stuff can go down and you're not around and you're not there, and, you know, it just wears on you emotionally, and that maybe could lead to health issues besides just the general stress of the job. So, you know, like, my heart goes out to the dude. You know, I'm not a big Florida fan. I'm not even an Urban Meyer fan. But just as a father and a family man, it's hard to see a guy step away from something that he loves to do and have to choose between his family or his job, because it's just a hard decision to make, and it's not an enviable position to be in.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I heard Herm Edwards try to talk about the schedule of a coach. And he described a scenario, even on away games, where you could go from one Friday probably to the next Thursday or Friday and not see your kids. Because if you had to so he just kind of walked through an entire schedule. You know, you leave, you know, that's for the NFL. So he said, you know, you leave Saturday, you know, you fly out, you know, you have your game on Sunday, you don't get back late until Sunday night. You know, kids are already up. You're up at 4:30 on Monday. You're in there. He works out, watch film. All the other coaches come in around 7. You know, but he's there until 11:30 at night. You know, Monday, Tuesday, same schedule. Wednesday, got practice. You know, same schedule Thursday. So, like, maybe by Friday, he gets on Monday, too. So you go almost an entire week and not see your kid. So, you know, that is, you know, you're talking about big-time athletics. I mean, I do some work with, you know, Big Ten school here, you know, talking to a couple of coaches, and, you know, right after the game, they're flying out Sunday and Monday to go watch, you know, to talk to recruits when they have the ability to have those visits or go and watch players or, you know, or whatever it might be. And just, you know, when you start getting into that part of the season. So it you know, with big-time athletics, it can be taxing. I mean, one of the things I'm hearing, and, you know, they probably talk a lot about is, you know, for Urban Meyer getting, you know, his health, you know, the fact that, you know, that heart condition is basically saying, you know, he can keep coaching or he can have a heart attack and die. And the guy looks like he's in great shape. I'm thinking, man, I'm way overweight. This cat looks like he's in great shape, but that stress is a silent killer.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is, and it takes a toll on you.
Yeah.
It takes a toll on you. It takes a toll on your body, and it is. It's a silent killer because you don't know that it's even having that effect on you. Oftentimes, till it's too late, you know.
And he's young enough. I mean, you don't see Gruden rushing back. I mean, Gruden's enjoying that TV life. I mean. You know, he's working hard doing his job, but you don't see Gruden rushing back.
Nah.
And he loves, you can tell he loves coaching like anything, but he's probably smarting on he needs a little bit more time to recuperate. You know, and, you know, Urban Meyer is young. He's a young guy. I think he's in late 40s. I mean, you can take off 5 years. And, I mean, sometimes the game gets faster. You got to come back and get acclimated, but you know, he could be a guy you could see coaching in 5 years. He might be the next Notre Dame coach. You know,
he loved
Notre Dame. He might end up back in Notre Dame, you know. But yeah, that is, like you said, it is tough to see. You have to make that decision, but you know, I guess it comes to a time where you know you got to talk about your family and being around is at some point worth more than you know winning those games.
Yeah, and that's the double-edged sword to it all, man. Is that you know. You want to be there. You want to be a part of everything. It's your program. You build it up. You know, you maintain it. You know, you win, you lose. It's all, you know, it's all a part of sports, and it's all enjoyable, but it's also a grind. It is also a grind, and it also, you know, again, takes you away from your family, puts a bunch of stress on you mentally, physically. Sometimes you just gotta walk away, and then, you know, just the fact that you know he was able to make that decision, you know, speaks a lot to the severity of the issues. Because again, you're walking away. I mean, you're walking away from a great, great job. You know, this is like, you know, Steve Jobs walking away from the Microsoft gig, from the Apple gig.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Where everything's clicking. Everything's going well. Yeah, they didn't have that great of a season this year, but again, I expected them to be right back where they usually are next year. You know, it's not like I felt like the program was going downhill or anything. But, you know, and then you look at this season and you wonder how much did his health and everything else play into the struggles of the team, you know? So, I mean, it's just an interesting situation there.
Yeah, and one of the things that Dean Smith had that saying, he said, you know, he's looking on the court and he realized that his future depended on decisions of 18 to 21 year olds. And you think about that, you know, and I know he dealt with a lot of issues on the off, you know, where he had to kick some kids off and deal a lot of issues off the field. But you multiply that by football and realize that your future depends on these 18 to 20 year olds, on this campus down here in sunny Florida making right decisions.
Yeah.
You got to manage all of that and be under the scrutiny. And you got to hope that these kids make the right decisions, that you got the right leaders who can manage the locker room. And, man, that, you know, that puts that's a lot of pressure that you have to put on thinking that, you know, you and I spend a lot of time with college kids, and they make a lot of decisions that make you scratch your head.
Yeah, they do. They do a lot of dumb stuff.
Yeah, you
do a lot of dumb stuff.
You know, my livelihood depends on these cats at 2 o'clock in the morning making the right decisions.
Right.
So it, you know, that adds pressure to their lives, because they got to, you know, and that's why they try to control every element of the day of some of these young folks.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them busy, keep them active, keep them involved in a lot of things to minimize something bad happening. But they wake up every night not only trying to figure out how to win, but hoping they don't get a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody did something crazy on campus. So, yeah, I mean, it's all those things that take that stress on the life of a coach. But it's, you know, but they replaced them with Muschamp. And, you know, all these big time, you know, coaches in waiting, you know, kind of the Garrett of college football. You know, he was supposed to be that guy in Texas. You know, now he comes to Florida, and, you know, he knows the SEC, but he was at Georgia, played at Georgia, didn't he? And, you know, this guy's familiar with what's going on, and he's going to jump in and take this over. And he's supposed to be a great recruiter. So, you know, we'll see. You know, usually a program like Florida gets a big-time head coach, but now they're taking this big-time assistant, and you got to see what happens. You know, does he do what Chizik did, coming back into the SEC, and taking over. So you got Al Golden down in Miami.
Yeah.
From Temple, so you got some key positions being filled. I heard an interesting discussion about Golden, you know, and Temple, and that, you know, is his record really that solid given that Temple moved from, you know, moved to the MAC and had the biggest, you know, budget in the MAC, and, you know, kind of like Indiana moving from Big Ten to the MAC.
Mm-hmm.
And that program should be successful if it went to the MAC. And so I heard some discussions about that on the airwaves. But, you know, what will he do down in Miami, who's trying to, you know, recapture their glory? So there's a lot going on.
So what do you think went wrong in Miami? And any callers out there who have some insight into this, please call in. I know we got some folks who listen who are in Miami. Call in 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to call in and give us your insights. But, I mean, what do you think went wrong in Miami? With Randy, I mean, why has Miami struggled to get back on top?
Well, you know, one of the things is, you know, and you probably won't have a chance to watch that 30-30 about Miami, but, you know, they spent so much time trying to repair their image. And Shannon did a good job. I mean, he had one of the best graduation rates. You know, that's the thing about college football. You know, he didn't have terrible seasons, but he didn't have Miami-type seasons. But he had kids who were graduating at a very high rate. I mean, he had a very high rate, I think, in terms of those terms of top programs in the country. He had a really good high rate. So he had the kids doing what they're supposed to do, and this tells you where people put their priorities. And so he was building the program, I think, you know, in a slow, right way, but it wasn't as fast enough as they needed. And, you know, that to me, that's part of it. So, you know, when I used to play, and I used to say this in high school football, in college football, every once in a while, you need a cat that would be probably in jail if he wasn't playing. You know, every once in a while, and that's true for football, every once in a while, you need a couple crazy cats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to be in an elite program, you know. Every once in a while, you need a couple cats that if they weren't playing football, they would be taking your television set. And they had more of those than they probably cared to have back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But he's recruiting kids. He ain't recruiting some of those wild kids that they had, but he's recruiting good kids who can still play, but they're not the elite players that are now going to Florida and, you know, and going elsewhere. And I think that was part of the problem. But, you know, he had a solid, you know, he had some solid seasons with him. But were they elite? No. But were kids graduating? And that's what they wanted. And, you know, I don't know what's going on, and I don't know how goals don't change that. You know, they need to go on and get Jimmy Johnson back.
Somebody.
Get him off the yacht, you know. You know, but Miami, and also, you know, they lost the mystique of the Orange Bowl. You know, they got, you know, they don't have that anymore. They're not, you know, it's just certain things that these don't have that add to the legend of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
That they're going to have to still try and build back up. But, you know, as far as the quality program, he did everything right. So that tells you when doing everything right still doesn't get you fired.
Yeah, well, we learned that with Ty Willingham. You know, we saw that there. I mean, a more respectable guy couldn't have lost the job, you know. I mean, when the things that Ty Willingham would, you know, when the way he operates and the way he runs the program, when that's not enough because the wins aren't translating, then it is, you know, at that point it's not about everything else that goes on at a program, but it's about wins and losses.
Now you can tell what kind of impact on these kids. These kids were crying when he left.
Yeah.
And they saw him as fine figure. And several top recruits decided not to decommit,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to do some other things. And so you could tell he was beginning to build and see that, you know, he had Harris and his teammates came from the top high school, so he's beginning to pull those kids back in, you know, guys didn't perform as well as they needed to perform, but he was beginning to build that pipeline from some of those top high schools down there in Florida. So, yeah, he was building more like a slow cooker. But
mm-hmm.
but if you do it right, it's going to taste good.
We see down there in Miami, they want the microwave championships.
That's right. And what's going to happen, so this is how it usually happens, is Golden will come in, and he might mess around and have them in there with Shannon's players.
Yeah, when?
You know, in 2 years.
Yep.
You know,
the Weiss effect.
Like the Weiss effect. You know. And,
then they give him some ridiculous extension.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, extend him for another 10 years.
Yeah.
Only to find out that he really ain't what we thought he was.
That's right. And so I think that, you know, it's too bad, but you know, that's how college sports goes. And then, you know, as you talk about black coaches and the whole idea of the whole branding of the program, being able to golf with the good old boys and all that other stuff in terms of raising money, you know, they get played out. And those are some of the behind-the-scenes reasons why some of these cats, you know, are not always getting jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, can they sit in the country club and golf with the right people and do all the other things that need to be done around the program?
Right.
And some of that comes into this conversation as well, to be able to raise the money to get the facilities and all that other stuff that are part of these dynamics. So, yeah, you know, it's kind of crazy that, you know, his reward for building a program where kids are graduating was before they weren't.
Right.
You know, at the high enough level, you know, is you out of a job. So that's how it works sometimes. And now Al Golden comes in and, you know, Muschamp up in Florida and, you know, and now we're here, and I called it last week, and now we hear more people talking about what might happen up in Michigan, you know, with possibly Harbaugh coming in. But you heard it here on Real Sports Guys.
Negro Domus.
Don't let nobody else tell you. Don't let some of these folks who are on these national shows pull the wool over. I called it first. We called it here. And, you know, if the change happens, you know, you heard it here first on Real Sports Guys. So when you're watching PTI and all this other stuff, on all these other shows across the airwaves, know that you heard it here first.
They laid in a dollar short. We already scooped them.
That's right. So all you amazing, get your amazing blue draws out. It's about to get real heavy. Harbaugh coming home, and I'm a pioneer. Do your thing. I had to give a shout out.
Yeah, I mean, man. So then, I mean, does Rich Rodriguez take this Pittsburgh job that came open? I mean, what's next for him?
Well, I think that he would be a good candidate for, you know, for a Pittsburgh or something like that. That's back in his recruiting area. I think he could, you know, he's familiar with the conference. It'd be some irony, like a mother Skippy. He'd be a Pittsburgh playing against West Virginia.
Yeah, he'd really be hated out there.
Yeah, I think they'll pick him up again. I just think it's one of those situations where it's a bad fit. It just doesn't happen the way it needs to happen. Yeah, I think that happened. But, you know, think about the Big Ten. You got Bo Pelini coming in with Nebraska. You know, if you have Harbaugh at Michigan, you got Tressel at Ohio State. You got Bielema doing his thing at Wisconsin. You're about to go out there. I don't know if you heard the new song they got out there, Smelling Roses.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, they got that going. You got Michigan State if they can hold on to it. I mean, you got Iowa, what's happening with Ferentz there. I mean, the Big Ten is going to be hopping.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And, you know, Minnesota, I think Minnesota is a program that if they get the right guy out there, that could turn around and,
right. You
know, things could get real interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're looking at, you know, the Big Ten could be something else next year. You get the right pieces in there, and, you know, you get a program like Michigan coming back, and, you know, you got these two divisions. Now, what do they call those divisions? They got new names for those
divisions? Oh, Lord have mercy. These are the wackest names in the universe.
what they call them?
The Leaders and the Legends divisions.
Leaders and the Legends. Only the Big Ten would come up with some craziness like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't be more pompous than Eric.
The Leaders and the Legends. Where they get that? Ain't no East, West. Ain't no North, South.
I mean, they could have called it, I mean, oh, Lord.
the pros and the Joes.
I'm telling you, man.
We come out the Crips and the Bloods.
Right, the Democrats and the Republicans. I mean, the Leaders and the Legends, come on. Like, y'all supposed to be some of the best and brightest across the country. This is what y'all come up with? And nobody in the room say that, man, it sounds stupid.
That's some college presidents, I bet you, came up with that.
I'm telling you, man. People that are very disconnected from the rest of the world.
I'm telling you, when you see doctors, they're PhDs. They were experts in that little topic, like
yep.
Asian studies focusing on Cambodian life between
right.
1836 and 1843.
Right.
They balance their checkbook. They come with the
absolutely.
In the legends.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I've been off the board a little bit sick. Somebody said he was talking about that. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Only the Big Ten would come up with some craziness like that.
Yeah, it kind of disappointed a bit. Kind of disappointed slightly.
So who are the leaders and who are the legends? I'm like, I see where they divided it. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. Then all the trophies got hyphenated names. I mean, trying to be overly inclusive. Come on, man. Just get a damn trophy a name, man.
Oh,
like the trophy been through a divorce or something.
Oh, hell no. Well, I'm ready for bowl season because I was with some guys talking because Wisconsin going out there to the Rose Bowl. So, you know, I'm looking at all these ball games coming up, so I'm excited about that. Hopefully, you know, as they get into Capital One Bowl week, maybe we can prep for that, get deep into some of these bowl matchups.
Oh yeah, absolutely, so, man.
I want to see who's in the Motor City Bowl. We can get deep into the selection.
So. Let's transition. You know, some NBA I want to talk for a little bit. You know, we talked the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, also known as the NBA. I want to get into that for a little bit because there's a lot of interesting things going on, a lot of things are taking a turn for the better, a turn for the worse. Before we get into our second hour, we got about 15 minutes left in the first hour, so, you know, I want to take a little bit of time and touch base on the NBA. One thing we want to report for those of you that may or may not know this, is that there was a trade tonight. It was a small trade. It wasn't major. But the Nets traded. The Nets and the Lakers made a trade, and probably the most notable player in the trade was Sasha Bujicic. He was traded to the Nets. Terrence Williams from the Nets, goes to the Rockets. You know, he's coming back up from the D League. Kid's got a lot of talent, but kind of a little screwy, got a little bit of a screw loose. And New Jersey just wasn't trying to put up with that. And the Lakers got Joe Smith and a bag of Cheetos. So, you know, my initial reaction was, you know, okay, the Lakers didn't get very much back. But, you know, I think D had a different perspective on the situation, so I'll let him share that.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk about regarding the Lakers is that, you know, obviously with Andrew Bynum recovering, you know, getting Joe Smith provides them with a big guy who can, you know, he can space the floor a little bit. He's a good passer, be good in a triangle, add some depth. And I think kind of like what you said, you know, this was also a move for the Celtics. This is one that the Lakers are really preparing for the Celtics, you know, and, you know, trying to get through their conference. But, you know, the idea that they're probably going to find they're going to meet the Celtics and having that depth at the big man spot with somebody like Joe who's versatile. It's going to be important. You know, he's not going to give you huge minutes, but he'll give you those important minutes.
Yeah, and you know, to me, that's what, you know, after thinking about it and talking through it with you, that's what this deal seems more about. It seems more about, okay, the Celtics look extra tough. You know, I think what the Lakers did is they surveyed the landscape and said, okay, who's coming out of the East, and who are we going to have to compete with in the West? And what move can we make to better put us in a position to be able to do that? And I think at the end of the day, they felt like going to get a big was going to help them be in better position to match up with the Celtics, in better position to match up with Dallas and San Antonio, who are major players right now, kind of unexpectedly. San Antonio is, you know, it's one of those years with the Patriots will win. It's like 1999 all over again. You know, the Patriots are good. San Antonio's good. You know, it's like, you know, they're going like they never left. You know, they back like they never left. So, you know, it's interesting to see how – it's going to be interesting to see how teams maneuver to put themselves in position. But there's some really – statistically, there's some really interesting seasons that are happening right now outside of just the overall standings. You know, you got a guy like Kevin Love, who is, I mean, he's having a monster year. I mean, he's almost putting up 20-15, which is pretty unheard of.
Yeah, he's, and I was looking at it, his rebound percentage that he covers per game is, I think, better than folks like Moses Malone and I think Dwight Howard, Shaq. I mean, those are the only people close to him. And for a career, I think Dennis Rodman might be the only one that's higher. So, I mean, this kid has turned around real quick. And he's doing it, and he's not one-dimensional. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Usually these are guys who just – a lot of guys are who rebound at the rate he's rebounding. That's all they do.
Right.
Wallace and all those things. But he's also scoring. He's hitting threes. I mean, you're talking about him, you know, putting together a pretty special season.
Absolutely. It really is. And it's expected, but I think people expected him to be a solid rebounder, in particular because his per-minute numbers were pretty good the last couple of years. He did a good job with the playing time that he had. But this is just, I mean, you look at these numbers, you're just like, damn. I mean, you really are just like, damn. I mean, these are some video game numbers here. like, straight up, I mean, he's hitting threes. He's making nice passes. I mean, you know, I think if Rondo was healthy, Rondo would be having that kind of an impact in the assist category, you know, because he's still averaging almost 14 assists a game at 13.7, which is, again, If he can maintain that for an entire season, that's a whole lot of damn assists.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're having some real interesting statistical seasons. But again, with Kevin Love, his numbers aren't necessarily having an impact on the standings because the rest of his team is so poor.
Yeah.
But Rondo, I mean, you know, his health is going to play a major role in the Celtics' ascent to the East and hopefully, you know, on into the championship. That's the team I'm picking to come out of the East is the Celtics. I'm looking at Lakers-Celtics again, but there's one team. There's one team that's starting to throw a monkey wrench and is looking really good, at least right now, and that's Chicago. And it's a team that I had on my radar at the beginning of the year, and they got off to a slow start, and Boozer was hurt. But with Boozer coming back and with Rose playing, I mean, he's in the conversation for MVP at this point, playing great ball. The Bulls are looking like legitimate contenders in the East.
Yeah,
so,
and I watched them against the Lakers the other night. You know, they hadn't, you know, Derrick Rose has never beaten the Lakers, a Derrick Rose-led team. And, you know, that victory over the Lakers, I mean, he basically took it on his shoulders. But what I realized is when they worked their offense through Boozer, you know, it was very effective. I mean, he opened up the floor, and Derek's jump shot is much improved. I mean, he's got, you know, as many threes made now at this point in the season, I think, that he had all last season. So it's telling you, and this is what I'm talking about, working the elements of your game. He's expanding, adding to his game. Kind of like the guy who got the statue out front.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who always added a piece to his game. You see, this is a guy that's added a piece. This is why I always get on LeBron. It's like, you added some pieces, but, you know, always add another element to your game. Come back with something new. This is a kid that's demonstrating that he's adding something new to his game, you know, that's going to benefit him now with Boozer down here commanding double teams in the post. Now he's in position to make scoring easier. But if you can knock down that range, you're not expending a lot of energy. You know, you get some buckets, you get some points, and then you're creating a spacing that's going to allow you to drive to the basket because people got to close out on you hard. Now you can fake, get to the basket, maybe open up the lanes for passing. You know, so you can see when you watch the team, and it's what we always said, the other part is Dang. It allows Dang to be, you know, Dang is going to be a 15-7, 15-6 guy. But on
right.
This team, 15-6 look real good.
Exactly. I mean, he you know, I use the Leroy Hoyt analogy because I got the Leroy Hoyt quote in my head. But, you know, Leroy Hoyt always said, you need 3 yards. I'm going to get you 3 yards.
That's right. That's
you need, you know, you need 1 yard, I'm going to get you 3 yards. You need 7 yards, I'm going to get you 3 yards. You know what I'm saying? And that was Leroy Hoyt. And I think, you know, there's certain situations where you can accept that. You give me my 3 yards, you know, and I think that's what Lou Aldang is. He's going to give you 15-7.
That's it.
And he's been giving you 15-7 since his rookie year.
That's it.
And that's all you're going to get from that man is 15-7. So you got to basically, you know, put him in a position. But he can get his 15-7 and not dominate the ball. You know, he can get his 15-7 as a complimentary player. So, like, you can put pieces around him, but regardless of what pieces you put around Luol Deng, his game ain't going to slip. His production is not going to slip because he's a slasher. He runs the floor. You know, he's a finisher. So as long as he's playing with playmakers, he can do what he needs to do, which is finish.
Right.
You know?
And what you want him to do is then be a good defender, rebound, get in there, you know, do the little things to help us win, right? You know,
yeah.
So you want him to be able to do those things in addition to giving us 15-7. You can ask, I want the other effort stuff, because now you don't have to expend a lot of energy, but now we got Boozer down here making it a little bit easier for us.
And the way the Bulls are playing right now, if you put them in a 7-game series with the Heat, I'm taking the Bulls.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you go matchup for matchup, you know, Bron is going to get his. Wade is going to do his thing, but they have no answer for D-Rose at the point. And Bosh is going to get ate up by Boozer. And, you know, no one's going to win his battle with whatever of their centers that they put there. You know, I think that team is, and what poetic justice would that be if they do meet up with the Heat and knock the Heat out in the playoffs in a 7-game series after LeBron spurned Chicago? I'm sure the Chicago listeners out there will get a major kick out of that, because yeah, that would be some poetic justice if there was ever any.
It's gonna be real Hollywood.
It's going to be real Hollywood down here.
And Noah just rebounded. They look good, and Thibodeau got them focusing on that defense like they're supposed to. Yeah, so Chicago is that, you know, is a team that, you know, you knew once they got the big fella back, they were going to be better. They sit in the top of the Central Division. They're playing well at home. You know, but a guy like Boozer's going to allow you to win on the road. Because he's going to be the kind of guy who can get that stuff down the stretch. That's like running the football. He's going to be getting some easy buckets in the fourth, command that double team. You know, so, yeah, I'm with you. They look real good. But what about New York?
Yeah, I mean, the Knicks are playing well. They've been beating up on bums. But I think it's still one of those.
We're beating up on all bums.
Yeah, you know, they walking down the street slapping bums. But, I mean, this is a team that in the past couldn't even do that.
No.
You know, in the past few years, they weren't able to do this. Now they're winning games that they're supposed to win. And I think that's something that you got to take away from this whole thing if you're a New York Knicks fan, is that your team is winning the games that they're supposed to win, which is something that, again, they haven't done in about 10 years.
Yep.
Like, seriously, they haven't been relevant. They haven't been noteworthy, except when things are going wrong, for about 10 years. And Raymond Felton is playing well. Amari Stoudemire is earning that check. The East as a conference, I mean, the East is rivaling the West right now as far as it's hard to say which conference is better at this point. I mean, if you look at the conference standing, the East has six teams with a 600 win percentage or higher. You know, in out West, they have six teams with a 600 win percentage or higher. So, you know, I think it's starting to even out. You know, that shift, that balance is shifting between the East and the West. I think you have Chicago on the upswing. You got New York on the upswing. And this is a big week for New York. They have Boston coming to town. I think Miami comes in. So they got the Heat. They got the Boston. They got Boston coming in tomorrow. And then on Friday, they got the Heat coming into the Garden. So New York is going to be a hot spot.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be the place to go watch a game. And then over the next couple of days, you know, it's going to be real interesting to see if the Knicks can keep playing at the pace that they've been playing at over this win streak. Again, they beat up on a lot of bad teams. But they beat Denver, which is a solid team. They got Boston. They got Miami coming in. Then they got Oklahoma City. Then they got Chicago. Then they got Miami again. Then they got New Orleans. San Antonio's coming in there. Phoenix, L.A. So it's going to be they got a rough stretch coming up. I think from now to, like, January 12th, it's going to get thick for them. We're really going to see if this team is ready to make that jump and be at least in the conversation out East, because I think this is what they need this year. They needed to have a year where they start to turn it around, because, you know, if they want to attract free agents, you know, them winning is going to make New York look real good. And I'm not surprised that with this win streak you hear Carmelo come out talking about he only signed an extension if he gets sent to New York, because – you know, from afar, it looks like, man, we can go in there and win right away. You know, if we add one more stud to this lineup.
Yeah, and I know Lala got some work she got to do out in New York, so I'm okay with that. You know, but he coming out real big and heavy about that. And you know, the big question about the D'Antoni team. They tease you like this because, you know, he could build a team that's going to be great in the regular season and compete. But what I haven't seen from his teams is the kind of things that win championships, a commitment to defense. They look like they play a little bit better defense now, but I haven't seen, you know, they're scoring and doing all the things that can fill the seats. They're winning some games. And those things work in the regular season because, you know, back-to-backs, regular season goes. But, you know, what I see in a place like Chicago are the things that Thibodeau, you know, there's times where they don't score for stretches, but the way he's coaching for the playoffs. Right? I watch him coaching for the playoffs. He's coaching for the championship. So they don't look pretty. And in their stretches, like they started that game against the Lakers, man, they were down early. You know, and so he was coaching on defense. He was coaching all those things that don't look pretty now, but you do this work now when you get to that five, that seven-game series, you know, and you need that game seven. It's because you did this work in November and October and the preseason and things like that that don't. And I don't always see that, you know, even when he was in Phoenix, I don't see that kind of stuff. And so, you know, is he going to be a Westhead type coach or, you know, guys who just, you know, who coaches up and down game or Westfall as well, you know, it's up and down game, but it's not the kind of game that's ever going to bring you a championship. And that's the real question mark about him. That's going to be interesting if they can answer over the long term.
Because yeah, I don't even think it's a question mark. I say no.
Yeah. You know,
I say no because playoff ball is played in the half court. You're not going to be able to run a gun, and you got to be able, again, in this NBA, because solid big man and solid post play is so rare, you got to have a guy who can guard one-on-one on the block or who commands a double team.
Yeah.
I still have yet to be moved off that stance. If you don't have a guy who can cover one-on-one on a low post threat or a guy who commands a double team, you don't have a shot right now.
Yeah, and I think, and it looks like Stoudemire has made some commitment to do some stuff defensively, but can you do it over the long haul? You know,
he's good. He's good. Right now he's improved his help defense.
Yes.
I still don't see him as, you know, put him on a Dwight Howard or a Boozer or even a KG at this point. And say stop him, you know, and say you keep him from scoring. I wouldn't do that to Amari. You know, he's not that guy. He's not that guy yet.
So those are questions, you know, who's going to be his Oakley? Because he's going to need somebody like that who's an enforcer. Got like an old 80s style back to New York.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when I talk about the Steelers throwing the ball when they should be running. There's something about New York. In New York, I watched this old clip of Game 7 the year after Michael retired when they played the semifinal game between the Bulls and the Knicks. You know, the Garden was rocking, but that was that defense. And you had two cats, Mason and all these cats, banging and Oakley and Harper and, you know, you guys just getting at it. And, you know, those aren't those Knicks playing right now. And so, like you said, you know, we've got to see if this is fool's gold. How long can it go? The stretch is going to tell us a lot about their ability to take a punch in the mouth and respond. You know, there's a lot to be seen. But this East, like you said, this East is going to be tough. The playoffs are going to be fierce. You know, we're not even talking about Milwaukee just stopped Dallas's streak, right?
Yeah, yeah, and you know, Milwaukee's finally getting healthy and they're starting to turn it around. They've gotten off to a real slow start. When you add pieces and then you have injuries, you know, it just takes a little bit longer to cook that cake. But they're coming along. You know, I don't know if they're going to they're going to make some noise, but of course they're not going to be the factors that they could have been. But they're absolutely going to be players in the playoffs and, you know, if they can get it going, Jennings doesn't look like he's figured out how to play his position as well as I think he should have by now, going into his second year. Yeah, he's only in his second year, but, you know, I was expecting him to take a bigger step as far as shot selection and that kind of stuff, and it doesn't look like he's taking it because he should be really facilitating. They brought in a lot of offensive firepower and guys who can score points to take some of the load off of him. Having to do that, but I still don't think he's kind of gotten in. He's doing that yet, where he's allowing those other guys to do their thing, and you know him just be a facilitator. You know, right now he's got a little too much Marbury in his game. I think he's got to find that balance.
And I think Skiles will get him back on track with that. And that's part of the young team is, you know, getting people coming back in, buying into the right play, way to play and being consistent and, you know, sometimes shaking out those early season, getting those bad habits out, get back to the things that we do well. And I think, you know, Skiles will help them get back, bounce back in that way to doing that. You know, but I look at the East and, you know, Miami on their streak. You know, they begin to put some things together, but, you know, can they beat, they've had some different decent games against a couple of elite teams here lately. You know, but, you know, are they really turning the corner? You know, so we got a lot of good stuff out here. Dallas is doing it. San Antonio, I mean, you talked about that. I mean, San Antonio is 20-3. You know, like you said, it's time they turn back the clock. And how they've shuffled and rebuilt that lineup and rebuilt that roster to get them ready again to make a run. And that's going to be interesting to see what San Antonio does out west. You know, now that seems like they're building some depth, you know, on their squad. So, yeah, this is going to be quite a run in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm looking forward to it because, you know, the season is only going to get more interesting as we go. You know, so as we always do, we're going to keep you guys up to date on what's going on in the league, you know, what's going on in the NBA. What we do want to do right now is transition and talk a little baseball. You know, we don't really talk a lot of baseball. We especially don't talk a lot of baseball during football and basketball season. But there was a big move made today, and, you know, it involved Cliff Lee, the number one free agent, pulling a LeBron and turning down the big money, taking less money to be on a better team and to be in a better situation and to play with guys that he enjoys playing with. What do you think of that, Devon?
Well, I mean, it says a lot about Cliff Lee and, you know, what he really cares about. It also says a lot about the Phillies. I mean, you and I talked about this off air. I mean, you know, I've been kind of watching the Phillies and, you know, you have organizations that are like the Phillies who have the resources, who could act like the Yankees, you know, not, you know, but be in that neighborhood, who just decide not to operate that way. And you always wish that they'd go for it. And I'm happy to see, I mean, people who live in Philadelphia need to be happy. You got Andy Reid and Mike Vick and what's happening with the Eagles. And, you know, no matter how they feel about McNabb, you know, that organization's been running well for a long time. You got a world championship with the Phillies. You know, you just got a lot of good things happening, I think, in Philadelphia. They need to be happy about this. And that the organization just kind of hung around, waited for the opening, and closed the deal. And, you know, in reports, you know, when he left Philadelphia, he had nothing but great things to say about his teammates. And it was an opportunity for him to come back and be a part of the organization. It's going to be a devastating lineup. You talk about Oswalt, when you talk about him, you talk about, you know, Holiday, you talk about just that lineup in general is going to be something else, you know, along with the power that they have in the lineup with their everyday players. I mean, they you know, you marking them up, you know, as much as you can talk about, you know, they're going to at least win that East, the NL East for the, what, fifth straight year. You know, but what it says about New York, you know, has, you know, with old George and Father George going, have they lost their luster? You know, is there something, you know, he's good friends with CC Sabathia, you know, reports of, you know, his wife and CC's wife, very good friends, and they still couldn't close the deal. So what does that say about the Yankees? And the Yankees, what, they offered, what, about $125-140 million? You know, I think they're prepared to go, what, 6-7 years? You know, if I'm the Yankees, you know, they got some work to do because the Red Sox are blowing it away.
Yeah.
The Red Sox are separating themselves in the AL. They're doing what the Yankees normally do to everybody else. So, but the Yankees, if you rarely have a season like this, when they decide to go after somebody and not get them, that says a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I think it says a little bit about the Yankees, but I think it says more about being a pitcher in today's Major League Baseball, where it's just better to pitch in the National League. If you're a pitcher, I mean, I'd rather pitch in the National League than face teams with DHs, especially pitching in the AL East, where you got to face a Red Sox lineup, you got to face the Yankees lineup, and you got to go through Tampa. And the Blue Jays are a tough lineup also. It's really interesting to see why Cliff Lee made the decision he made. And to help us do that, we got a caller on the line. We got Phil Thompson, you know, AKA D Newell in the house. Right now, Phil, we're talking about Cliff Lee and his signing with the Phillies. And, you know, if you want to join in with your take on that, if you want to take the conversation a different way, feel free to. Thanks for getting on with the Real Sports Guy. You know your presence is always appreciated and you're always welcome. So, what's up, brother?
Good evening. Good evening, fellas. Good evening. Yeah, I was really surprised that Cliff Lee did not sign with the Yankees. And, you know, I thought it was a foregone conclusion when the Yankees were in the hunt with the Rangers. And, you know, the Phillies, they got rid of him earlier in the year, last year, because his contract was expiring and they wanted to get something back from him. But, you know, I was a little leery about the Yankees getting him, especially with the whole Derek Jeter situation happening the way it did. And, you know, I can't imagine Jeter was out there helping to bring him in, you know, and that. If I'm Cliff Lee, if I'm seeing the way they're treating Derek Jeter, you know, that has to really make me rethink the whole situation as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about, you know, what happened with Jeter and how public became. You know, this is your beloved star, and, you know, y'all flexed on him in a way publicly that, you know, and everybody perceives him as untouchable. You know, that
right.
Kind of signals does that send. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does. And maybe it's just maybe this is a change with this new Steinbrenner regime, with the new Steinbrenners being in control. Maybe this is a new pattern that you're going to see where people go other places. And you know what? We probably would see this more if there was revenue sharing, where the Yankees wouldn't have been a foregone conclusion that Cliff Lee was going to go to New York. Because I thought the same thing. I thought it was. I wasn't even paying attention to it because I was just waiting on them to announce he signed with the Yankees.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was going to sign with the Yankees and go back to Texas. It looked like he really enjoyed being in Texas. And, again, you know, when you're talking about tax-free, all the financial businesses, when you don't have a state income tax, and what did you get for his money, and less pressure, you know, as long as the Rangers were competitive and doing what they did last year, all the people rallied around them. You know, it took off a lot of pressure for him. That I thought, you know, staying with the Rangers would be a good option as well. But, you know, it's the name of the game.
Yeah, I think with the Rangers. Go ahead.
I'm not overly convinced that Cliff Lee is, you know, a guy that's going to be competing for Cy Young year after year after year. I think he's very dominant when he gets certain rest in the playoffs. But, you know, his record was 12-9 this year. And I know a lot of that had to do when he was playing in Seattle and they didn't really give him a lot of run support. But, you know, I'm a big Yankee fan, and I was a little bit hesitant about bringing him in. He's 32 years old. You know, he's been very inconsistent in his career. I mean, just 3 or 4 years ago when I was in Cleveland, I remember seeing him, and he got – you know, pulled back down to the minors. You know, he got sent down because he was so inconsistent. And, you know, since then he came back and he's been a much better ball player. But, you know, being in New York and you played in Texas and, you know, Philly for a little bit, but Seattle and Cleveland, I mean, that's a big adjustment. I was thinking, man, this is going to be another Carl Pavano.
You know, it could be. And, you know, I think your assessment may be accurate, because I think that's maybe why he chose to go to Philly, is because he's gonna be somewhat protected. He's gonna be somewhat protected by his supporting cast. When you got a lineup of you got the Doc in front of you, you got Oswald, you got Cole Hamill, and then you throw him in there. He's gonna be pitching rested in the playoffs, because he's not gonna necessarily be the go to ace. You know, he's not going to necessarily be the go-to ace. So then, for me, the question is, you know, should he be getting killed like LeBron got killed for going to a situation, you know, kind of dodging that, you know, star player responsibility, but still trying to get that star player money? Yeah, he took less money, but he's still getting paid pretty well.
I don't think so. I think it's two different situations, quite honestly. I'm the person. I might not be the right person on the show, because I'm not a LeBron basher. I don't see a whole lot of wrong what he did throughout the transition. But you know, don't hang up on me. But but those two situations are completely different. I mean, Cliff Lee, you know, he was just in Texas for a little while, where LeBron was there for 7 years. You know, I was listening to the Van Pelt show earlier, and they talked about that quite a bit, and some other places this morning talked about, you know, that comparison. But, you know, I think the one valid comparison there is that he did take a little bit less money, and, you know, Marcus, you're right. He's still getting paid, but he took a little bit less money, you know, to go somewhere else, which, again, I mean, if he's thinking about winning, that's probably the best situation in terms of, you know, if you think pitching is going to be a key. And they do have a dominant offensive lineup as well.
Yeah, like, I really can't argue with his decision to go to Philly at all. I mean, I think it's an excellent situation for him. I think at the end of the day, he probably assessed the options and thought, you know, I think, you know, looking at how the Yankees treated Jeter definitely played a role in it. Then also looking at Texas, a situation where if he got the money he was hoping to get in Texas, then what else can they do around him, you know, to keep that team competitive? You know, I think he assessed both situations and said, I'm going to go to Philly because I think this is a situation where I can get what I want, still have a good solid core team around me, and we can actually make a run at this thing for a good amount of time.
And I would add, the difference between those situations are even, in the difference in sports in terms of how people react, that there's so many variables that have to go in place for you to win in baseball. Even when you have a great pitcher, like even when they're pitching well, you know, one bad bounce of the ball, bad fielding, so many different other elements that have to go into run support, all these different things. And the perception of the variables needed in basketball when you're a great player, you know, in terms of just adding some elements, I think heightened. You know, so that's why I never made a comparison between someone like a Cliff Lee and a LeBron, is because it's perceived in basketball. If you get a couple pieces around a great player, you can impact so much, because there's so much more control you could have over the outcome of the game. And, you know, that's why I never really looked at it. I mean, I think that in baseball you have to surround yourself by, you know, that kind of talent, because there's so many different variables, and you only pitch every 4 or 5 days anyway where your impact can be, you know. And so, you know, that's why I never, you know, got too caught up with the comparisons about what he did. You know, what he's just figuring out is, you know, where can I can win? Being in the National League is probably better pitching there than being in the American League. And given what Boston just did, shoot, I can't be going up against them that many times trying to go get that lineup. I think it was less about the Yankees and more about Boston. It was like, I can't be facing them. And he already knows what it's going to be about, you know, facing the Rays. So, you know, I think he was just like, forget it. You know, I look at it now, I get, you know, I could just get tucked in this lineup over here in Philly, and we can do what we do. So, but I like what Boston did. You know, Epstein was just like, forget it. They loaded up. And so that's a team that I'm really looking to see what they do.
So, Phil, given what Boston did, I'm going to get your take while we got you on the line. Given what Boston has done, how do you feel about your – what do you think your Yankees need to do to keep pace now?
Well, I think they need some help in the outfield. I mean, their pitching staff, assuming that Pettit comes back, which you know a lot of folks aren't talking about it, but Pettit is a free agent. You know, I think the only reason he doesn't come back to the Yankees is if he retires, which could happen. I mean, he's getting up there in age. But right now, I think the Yankees need a little bit more power in the outfield. And left field, they were playing Gardner and some other non-household guys. And in right field, Swisher had a decent season, but he's not really a big-time guy, in my opinion. So, I mean, their pitching was pretty good over the course of the year. CeCe's got some issues with his knee right now. So, I do think the Yankees still need to improve because Tampa Bay, they haven't made a lot of big pickups. They lost Crawford, but their farm system is loaded. And they've kind of developed, you know, I mean, in a way that small market team has to develop through their farm system. So, you know, they got a kid coming up, I can't think of his name, that's going to come and play left field probably, at least compete for a position. They're thinking that he can do exactly what Jason Heyward did in Atlanta this year, come in and, you know, be a near all-star his first year. So, you know, Toronto's going to be decent, and like you mentioned, the Red Sox are going to be strong too. But, you know, overall, I think the Yankees are probably going to wait until the trade deadline, hopefully play well enough up until that point, and then make a move, a big blockbuster move at that point.
And some of the reports are also looking at shoring up the, you know, the you know their relievers, rotation kind of relievers for the middle of the innings. And trying to do that at least to kind of band-aid something through, and they got to have some offensive output, you know. they got to win some games 9-8 or whatever, like you said, until they get to a trade deadline where they might be able to add some more pitching, starting pitching to the team. Do you see anybody else out in the American League coming into the fold? Because so much of the discussion is about the American League East. You see anybody else that you see that can make a run?
Not really. Detroit made a few moves this offseason. They brought in one big guy. I can't remember who exactly they brought in, but they made some moves. But you know, outside of that, I really can't see it. You know, anybody else really coming in? You know, teams that weren't already in the playoffs or in the hunt last season, but I haven't been keeping a pretty, you know, very close eye on it since the season into that.
But there's one more shoe that I still think needs to drop, and that is going to get thrown from our direction out here in Wisconsin, and that's the move, the Brewers figuring out what they're going to do with Prince Fielder. Because I think that's still one player out there, because I think they got to trade him now. I think if they're going to get good value for him, they got to move him now during the offseason. They can't wait till the spring. They can't wait till the deadline during the season because they're not going to get the value that they can get now if they make a move. Because after the season, he's gone. But that's also what makes it hard to move him is because, you know, Boris is his agent. He wants to be in a major market. He wants him in a major market. So if you trade for him and you're not a major market team, do you get to keep him or are you just renting him? So if I'm the Brewers, I'm going to try to move him now because – during the season, I'm going to basically just be sending them out, trading them as a rental. You're not going to get the value that you can get. And they need to get value for them and you know, keep their farm system full of up-and-coming talent if they're going to continue to try and make a run and be involved. You know, that's the only way they can do it. You know, it's unfortunately selling off the guys that make good coming through there. So...
yep, he played in Beloit with them snappers. And now he about to get paid. But we covered more of that baseball in this segment. Phil, we want to thank you for adding to that piece. So we covered more baseball in one segment than we probably have in about 3 or 4 shows.
Oh, yeah. So we got our last half hour coming up, the magic hour. And, you know, and during the magic hour, we definitely must talk about the most important league in the world, and that is the NFL. And, you know, while we got our man Phil on, we're gonna let him help us with this conversation. You know, he's gonna sit in Ray's chair. We're gonna let him run his gamut with us real quick. So, I mean, where do we start? I mean, it was a pretty interesting week in the NFL. A lot of shuffling, a lot of movement going on. You know, just looking at the NFC playoff picture, it got less clear. It cleared up a little bit, but then got less clear at the same time. I mean, if you're looking at a team like the Packers, you know, you're looking at the NFC North situation with the Packers and the Bears competing for that division lead. That's up in the air with Rodgers having a concussion. Will he come back? Give me your take on that. Did you guys see what actually happened to Rodgers?
I didn't see that. I just...
Did
you see it, Phil?
Yeah, I saw it. He was scrambling, and I think he picked up, I don't know, 5 or 10 yards, picked up the first down, and he had the opportunity to slide, but he didn't. And he went in and he got hit like he was a ball carrier, but then the ricochet, his head hit the turf, and that's what caused the concussion. So it wasn't really the hit; it was him, you know, being hit, and then his head kind of awkwardly hit the turf, and that's what caused the concussion.
Yeah. So the talk up here has been, you know, he should have slid. You know, that kind of talk, how could he put the team in a situation? You know, just a lot of, you know, hindsight kind of banter about whether or not he should have slid, whether or not he should have been more aware of his value to the team. You know, people have been blaming Thompson. Either way or the other, they in deep water if you don't play because they got nothing behind them. It's not like they got somebody back there that they can hand the ball off to 25 times because they just don't. He is their whole team, and if he ain't playing, they in trouble. And it's really as simple as that. So, I mean, they're in trouble. Then the Bears get shellacked in what you would think would be bear weather. And I watched some of that game before TBS put me out of my misery. And switch games. But New England looks like a monster. New England looks like a monster. And, you know, Devon has been touting himself as Negro Domus lately. And, you know, we may have to give him his props, man, because he's been calling this football season pretty accurately thus far.
Thank you, young grasshopper. I said it when Ray's not on here to talk because he jumped on me when I said it, when I said, you know, losing Randy Moss was probably a good thing for New England because now they're back to how them Super Bowl runs where you really couldn't game plan for them. They're running that, you know, that short passing game. You know, they introduced those tight ends. They are just, you know, Bill Walsh and Brady are in their mode right now. And, you know, they're on all cylinders. I hate to say it, and I really hate to say it, but the Bears, and you can't play zone. And the Bears play that zone, and they just ate them up. You know, you got to get up there and bump them. You got to knock Brady down. You know, you got to play like a man under, maybe, you know, two over the top to help you cover some of the deep stuff and make him make some throws and make him hold on to that ball. But right now, they running that offense to the hills, and they allow their defense to do enough. You know, they're not looking spectacular, but they don't have to. They know if they get three and out, the offense can take care of it. So, you know, their offense is actually helping their defense look even better than it really is. So, You know, so I don't know. But I still, you know, so you're not as bad as you are. They say you are, you're not as good as they say you are. I still think Chicago can make a run. So I'm not totally throwing dirt on them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Bears. So I mean, how do you guys see this division ending up? I mean, the Bears looked, I mean, they look shaky. The offense looked shaky. The defense got shredded. The Patriots look real good. But, again, how much of that was the Patriots looking good and how much of it was the Bears just not being what we thought they were against a quality team, which we've been trying to get a read on. And they beat the Eagles, and we felt good about them after that. And then, you know, they play this game, and you kind of like, what's the deal? And then you got the Packers. You know, somebody's got to win this division. And they do play each other on the last week of the season. And luckily for the Packers, they face the two teams who are ahead of them for that wild card spot in the NFC. But, you know, again, if Rodgers ain't playing, I don't think they stand a chance. That's just my humble opinion.
I guess I want to say that. I want to hear what Phil has to say about this. But I was just going to say, in elements like that, the quarterback play is very important. Leadership comes in it, how you keep people focused on tasks. And that's an area that Cutler's not yet grown to. And then, you know, once things like this avalanche, it's kind of like, you know, once you get in a pace like that, it's kind of like when you play against Oregon. You know, once you get down a couple touchdowns, you try to fight, and all you do is make more mistakes. And I think, you know, as Cutler continues, that's one of those games where he continued to show his development. You know, and you start to think you're playing against Tom Brady. You're not really playing against Tom Brady. You're just running your offense. And you get caught up in a moment where Tom is just running his offense. So I think, you know, I'm not going to judge. I think the Bears are going to end up winning this division because I really do think that game notwithstanding, their defense is at least a championship defense for the NFC, and they can do enough to make some noise. And so I think they can go ahead and I think if I had to put my money on it, I'd put it on the Bears because they got more things they can do offensively. They can run the football, and they can throw a little bit, whereas the Packers are still one-dimensional.
Yeah, I like the Bears, too. Green Bay got New England coming up, and then after that they're playing against the Giants. And although they got the Giants at home, if Aaron Rodgers is not playing, I mean, the Detroit Lions are an improved team from last year. And no, they're not going to make the playoffs, like I said, or win 8 games the last time I was on. But again, they're Lions, and they only put up 3 points against them. So if Rodgers isn't playing this week or next week, it could get real ugly against New England and New York, especially the way New York, I mean, if they get a touchdown on you, they they will run the ball down your throat. So I'm not crazy about Chicago, but I think they have a little bit better schedule. Plus, they've got a game lead right now. I'm not sure what the tiebreaker situation is like, but I mean, even if they both win, like lose the next 2 games, I still like Chicago.
Yeah, one thing that I felt like Cutler showed in that game, and it's something that I've always kind of felt about Cutler. I feel like when the pressure gets tough and the situation gets tough and the elements are against him, I think he's quicker to fold than he is to rally troops. If things are going his way, he can get hot. But if they ain't going his way, he's not a guy who can turn it around and just maintain a certain level. With him, it's either great or bad, in my opinion, and from what I've seen from him. And I think this is another example where, you know, things weren't going his way and he just don't have the mental toughness to gut it out and turn the tide when things start out poorly. He doesn't have that mental toughness to turn that tide and bring a team back. And I think that's going to hurt the Bears if they get put in a situation where they do have to, play it out to the end of the season, because I think, you know, he's gonna hurt him at the wrong time, you know. As good as he can be, he can also be pretty darn bad. And I think that's where he has to do the work of becoming a better quarterback is why closing that gap between his bad games and his good games. And so a bad game isn't as poor as it is now. And it looks a little bit and feels a little bit closer to his good games.
And I think you put, in part of his maturity is when he comes into a game against someone like a Tom Brady, it's not you against Tom Brady. Like, do what your team does best. But if you look at who he's going to match up down the stretch, you know, you're looking at possibly Jackson in the next game. You know, I take him versus what they might put up there. You know, Favre is probably not going to show up. And then you're looking at Sanchez with the Jets, and that's going to be a home game. You know, and so, I mean, they end up winning these next two games going into the Green Bay game. They're already 4-0 in the division. So if they beat Minnesota, they'll be 5-0 in the division. And then they beat Jets, that'll add, you know, another game in there. I mean they could be going into that Green Bay game, you know, close to having everything wrapped up already. And so, you know, that's kind of what he's saying. But what you're saying is a good point. If they make the playoffs, what they're going to do in advance in the playoffs in terms of his ability to lead, that's a big question.
Yeah, and that's where he worries me. You know, even if they do make the playoffs, even if they do make it down the stretch, where does that leave this team come playoff time? And, you know, I think one of the big things that the Bears are going to have to do eventually at some point is they got to go out and get him a big-time receiver. You know, playing with these guys he's playing with is just not going – I mean, they're not going to get the results that they can get from him. Until he has a guy who he has a lot of confidence in going to. And I think that's part of the reason why he plays so poorly. You know, I think part of it is him, because even in Denver when he had Brandon Marshall, he still didn't strike me as a guy who could bring you back. He could bring you back if things are going well, but when things aren't going well, he didn't strike me as a guy who could be able to still gut it out, turn it around, and make plays down the stretch. Even with a big-time receiver, but I think having that big-time receiver helped a lot for him, and he just doesn't have that in Chicago right now.
But the question I wanted to ask y'all, what was y'all opinion of Deshaun Choice asking for the autograph after the game?
I'll let Phil take that one first.
You know, part of me was like, man, that's Mike Vick. But the other part of me is like, man, you can't do that on national TV. I mean, even Deshaun Jackson with that interview with Andrea Kramer. Did you guys see that interview?
I didn't see that interview.
Oh my goodness! I mean, it was borderline our test. I mean, he was she interviewed him and Mike Vick at the end of the game. You know. And Mike Vick, I mean, he's trying to keep it together. You know, obviously, you know, he's got to say everything right now because everybody's looking at him, waiting for him to make a mistake. And then you got Deshaun Jackson, the other side, throwing up. I mean, they weren't gang signs, but the equivalent of them, you know, just waving his arms, you know, pushing Mike while he's getting interviewed. I mean, just being real demonstrative. I mean, yeah, he was excited. He was real excited. Joker was, I mean, he was excited. So, you know, yeah, so, but to answer your choice, I mean, like, to answer your question, nah, man, no autographs on the field of play. I mean, maybe, you know, do that in the locker room or after the game, you guys are at the bus or something, but not right there in the middle of the field.
Yeah, I mean, That's your rival. That's a division rival right there. I know it's for your nephew and everything, but you have to tell your nephew he's gonna have to settle for Romo autograph, cause Uncle Tashard ain't finna walk up to no opponent and get the autograph. Sorry, youngster. You know, I mean, yeah. I feel like, yeah, you just don't do that. You don't do that in that situation. You know, it's just, it's some other time. there's a time and place for everything, and that's not the time and place to be asking for Mike Vick's autograph, especially when you just lost to him. You know, do I have a major problem with it? No. But do I think he could have done that in a different way at a different time? Hell yeah.
I think
very much so.
I'm not calling a grown man delicious. I'm not calling a grown man delicious. I'm not asking for autographs either. I'm just not. I'm not.
It ain't happening. Not on my watch.
And, you know, a lot of people talking about the fact that, you know, for a lot of these players, you know, they grew up idolizing Mike Vick and playing with, you know, playing him on the different video games, and now they're on the field with him. And talking about the impact that he's having on a lot of these young guys who just spent a lot of time idolizing them and playing with them on the games and just watching them. You know, they did those interviews with Deshaun Jackson and McCoy and those guys with Matlin. You know, they're like, you know, Macklin, they're like, you know, we used to play this guy in the video game. We used to watch him, and now we're in a lot of them. And the impact that Mike is having on a lot of these young guys across the league. And, but you're right. I mean, it's not uncommon for people to get autographs and stuff like that. Players have been doing it for years, but usually it's in the locker room setting, or they say, you know, hey, can I get this autograph for you? Or even when they meet each other in midfield, hey, look, I'd like to get an autograph for my, because I catch you right after the game by the bus or in the tunnel or whatever. You know, I'm going to stop by the locker room and catch you before you leave and get it. You know, they make those kind of arrangements on the field, you know, but you never really see it on the field. So, but it tells you the state of sports today. You know? Where you never see that between the Cowboys and the Eagles in the past, you know. You know, Tom Landry rolling over in his grave.
And we've talked about that. You know, I think, you know, it's a different world. The AAU circuit and the camps and recruiting visits and the nature of the whole scene right now, guys just grow up knowing each other and being a little bit more cordial with one another than we're used to seeing historically. And because of that, guys are a little bit less, I wouldn't say they're less competitive, but the competitiveness is manifests itself in a different nature, and it looks different than it did in the past, where it was a little bit more cut and dry. You either on my team or I hate you. And, you know, nowadays I think it's a little bit different.
And Mike didn't even break stride on it. He decided, you know. He decided. He was like, okay. You know, Mike didn't know what to do. He's like, you know, quit acting like, quit. I bet you probably said, quit acting like Ja Rule.
Oh, man.
Murder, I gotta go. I want to hear those young y'all got Ja Rule fans out there.
Ja Rule got fans?
I don't know.
Yeah, we might have to look that up, man.
I know.
Google Ja Rule fans, see what you can get.
I know he's going to jail right now. Yeah, so,
well, you know, it made me.
Ja Rule going to jail?
Yeah.
For what?
Yeah.
What could he be possibly doing at this point that's even worth going to jail for?
I'm trying to figure out how is he going to jail. I didn't know he came out of his house. But
yeah, I'm saying the police recognize him. I mean, he put out an APB on him
on his lyrics. So what? Did he drop another album? I don't know. But yeah, so that's the process here, but. The one thing I did want to raise is, what's happened with them J-E-T-S Jets? What's going on?
You know, man, it's one of those things where they are a team who is very volatile, and that's what makes them entertaining. But when you're a volatile team, it's going to be ups and it's going to be downs. And the ups is going to be way ups, and the downs is going to be kind of down. And I think right now they're just down a little bit, man. And that's how they are, man. That's how they're going to be. When you got a vocal group of guys, and you got a when things start to go down, you know, it ain't going to be pretty at times. But if they were going to pick a time to slump, if you know, now would be a good time to slump.
you know, it's never a good time to slump, but if you're going to pick a good time to slump, now is a good time because you can refocus before it's time to, before you get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they got a good schedule coming up, too, where I think they can reasonably win out the rest of the games. I tell you what, that Revis cat, I mean, he is a beast. I mean, he takes me back to the prime time days. I mean, this dude, you know, he started out a little bit slow in the early part of the season, but I actually got a chance to check out the game last week, and he shut Beth down for Miami. I know Brandon Marshall was just excited when he went out there. What? They not putting Revis on me? Okay, all right. You know, I mean, too bad it's quarterback Kenny, but still, I mean, Revis is a beast. And I think because of that defense, they can easily win the last two out of three and grab one of those wild cards.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they're going to make the playoffs fairly easily. I think with this team, given that so much of the talk has been about championships and that kind of thing, I think it's going to be interesting to see how if they can get it together enough to pursue that title that they've been talking about since August. You know, what's your take on the whole situation, D?
I just think that everything else is in place, but their quarterback has still got to learn. And, he's going to have three or four games, and he's going to have some bad games. And I don't think he's championship ready. If you look at who he's got to face in the playoffs, you know, a number of those teams are already, you know, it's going to come down to players making some plays, whether it's Flacco, whether it's Brady, whether it's Roethlisberger, whether it's whatever those teams. And I think when you start to put that pecking order together, he's the one right now. He's made a couple big plays this year, but he's made plays like a second-year quarterback would make. Some games he looked like he's Pro Bowl, and other games he looked like he's a rookie. He like what I say like sophomores are in college. You got some of those sophomores that some days they look like they talk to you like seniors, and some days they still can't find their pencils. It just developmentally, he's not where he need to be for this champion. And everybody, all the other pieces are championship pieces. You know, say I tell you, Holmes, you know, he dropped that pass. I was like, what the? I ain't never seen him play drop a pass like that.
Yeah, I ain't never seen anybody in the league. I mean, let alone a player of the caliber of Santonio Holmes, who I think is a really good receiver. Yeah, man, if a high school kid drops a pass like that, I'm going to look at him out the corner of my eye like, come on, Shorty.
Oh, yeah, you might not get back in the game.
Yeah, you got to bring that in.
They got so many other pieces in place, and I mean, Trail just talked about the defense and with Revis and things like that. But at the end of the day, to win a championship, your quarterback has got to make plays. They got to make a play. You know, even when Trent Dilfer was quarterbacking, you know, that Baltimore team, he had to make a couple of plays. Not many, but you got to make a play. And if you have an extraordinary defense who can also score, then you get to it. But he's not ready for that. So, you know, I can see them making the playoffs. I just don't see – I think he's a year away from being where he needs to be to take his team to another level. I think they're just a year – I always felt that even from watching Hard Knocks and watching – that they're just a year away, you know, that they slump a little bit this year, still be kind of competitive, but I thought they would be better next year. So that's how I think about the Jets. And then you know, you also got him, you know, you got Ryan ruffling up his defense. They only gave up 10 points, and he acted like they gave up 25.
And but so, see, I think that was him kind of trying to take, because he's a defensive coach. So I think that was him trying to take some pressure off the offensive players, and in particular trying to take some pressure off Sanchez. Was deflecting because the defense only did give up 10 points. So when you look at that game, you know, it's the same thing with the Packers. Like, you know, you look at the Packers game, they only gave up a damn touchdown. You know, they gave up 7 points. And so it's like, who do you blame? You blame the offense. You know, all y'all could get was 6 points. All y'all could get was 3 points. And so I think Rex is trying to deflect some of that and put it on himself, put it on his defense, because that's a unit that can handle that right now. That unit is less fragile. That's the strength of the team. So if you're going to take the pressure, you're going to put the pressure, you know, you're going to try and put that pressure where it can be handled best. You know, you're going to put the pressure on your good leg and not your bad leg right now. And I think he sees that offense is fragile right now.
And so this is the question that I would ask you guys is, you know, given that, and it seems like right now, windows in the NFL close very quickly. I mean, it's not more than 3 or 4 years ago where the Bengals looked like they were going to be perennial contenders for the next 4 or 5 years, and that just never happened. Or even the Vikings, you know, going back to last year and the year before that, it looked like they were going to be contenders for, you know, a good 3 to 4 years, and that just didn't happen. It just didn't happen that way. Will this window close before Sanchez is ready? Is where I'm going with this. Is the window for the Jets going to close before Sanchez gets ready? Is his defense going to get old before Sanchez is ready? Are the complementary pieces going to get old before Sanchez is ready? Because the complementary pieces are in their prime. Sanchez is the young piece right now. It's not like they got a lot of young talent around him on that offense. The offense is ripe and ready to go now. Is he going to be ready in time for them to capitalize on the pieces that they have right now? Or is it going to get to the point where now they got to start to reload and, you know, it's going to take another year? Because I think Green Bay may be in the same situation in a minute if they don't put some more pieces around Rodgers, you know, as far as a solid running game and making sure that they keep replenishing that defense with younger talent. You know, they still got to get some younger corners. You know, they let Al Harris go. Charles Woodson is getting older. So, I mean, both of these teams, I think, you know, they could see themselves like Minnesota in a year or two where that window just shuts real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what I do like about the Jets is what you got to have for longevity. They got a good owner. They got a good GM. Rex does what he does in media, but he's a good coach. They got a good foundation to coaching. So they got the kind of thing, and they got something that is very important. Because they got some of these things together, that they're going to be able to attract free agents. Because people will want to come and play for Rex. So I think the window is going to shift. They're going to have to grow. They're going to add some pieces together. I think they have time for him to mature. In a different way, those other examples you gave is, you know, Green Bay GM is still up in the air. But he had an opportunity to get Marshawn Lynch to really do something with the running game. He didn't do it. So there are going to be questions around that, you know, being a, when you pull the trigger. Cincinnati, they don't have the ownership in place. They don't have the GM in place. They don't have the things to keep the money. The window closed when you don't have people who understand how to plan for the window to close. You know, it seems like some of these great teams, even though Indianapolis is down a little bit, this injury, but you know they're going to be back next year. They window ain't closing. And great organizations, windows seem to stay open longer than some of these other organizations that are hit and miss. And I think the Jets got a good foundation in the leadership positions to help continue to build around Sanchez. So I think their window might be good for another 2 or 3 years. And I think he'll be ready. I think he's doing the kind of work that's going to allow him to be ready to really break out next year. I think because I just think that, you know, all have sophomore slumps, people game plan you, and he just needs to add some other elements to his game, and he'll be ready by next year.
You know, in the NFL, that's one position you can't go out and get somebody. Like we were just talking about in baseball and even in basketball, you can make a move and get a quality guy. Quarterback, you can't really do that. Donovan McNabb is probably about the best you're going to get on the free agent on a year-to-year basis, like that type of quarterback. You either have to draft a quarterback or you have to make a move on draft day to move up to get a quarterback. And, you know, Marcus, you bring up a good point. The Jets are where they are right now, and they only got another couple of years, in my opinion. And I wouldn't be surprised if things don't work out this year, if they bring somebody else in, whether it's a Kevin Cobb or, you know, they draft a young guy that might be ready in a year or two, you know, if nothing else but to push Sanchez, you know, to have somebody breathing down his throat. You know, because it seemed to work at USC with all that talent behind him. You know, he kind of had to rise to the occasion. I mean, right now they've given him the keys so early before he even had a first snap. I mean, he was the guy in New York. So I don't think we'll see this patience again this coming off season. If if they don't get any further, or, you know, if they don't, like, especially if they miss the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, I think you raised some good points. One thing I will touch on real quick is that you're talking about the USC quarterbacks, and then one funny observation is that Castle was the best one he played at USC. Statistically,
yeah.
He's the best one of the bunch right now that's in the league, and he didn't even play at SC. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do and how they manage Sanchez over the next year or two, depending upon how things go in these playoffs. Because just as, you know, it's fun to play for a coach who's really brash and who's outgoing with the media, it can also be tough, especially at the quarterback position, because win or lose, you're going to get a ton of blame. You're going to get almost just as much blame as the coach, and sometimes more, because you're actually playing. So when you play for a coach who is out there, who's talking, who's, you know, bringing the attention to the team in a good way and a negative way, again, as much fun as that can be, it also may put a little bit of undue pressure on a young quarterback. And I think, again, that's why Rex came out and railed against the defense as opposed to honest about the situation, saying the offense needs to improve and do a little bit of that.
And part of it is in this last game, his receivers didn't help him. You know, so, I mean, dropping some open balls right in their hands, Tony Holmes dropping that touchdown, you know, they didn't help him. And I think that's part of it, too, that, you know, there's so much that goes into being successful. And when guys are executing around you as well, you know, that makes it even more difficult for a young quarterback.
Yeah, so it's going to be, you know, things are heating up as we go down a stretch in the NFL. And this is the best time of the year to be an NFL fan. The races are getting tight. Atlanta and New Orleans look like sure locks in the NFC. But other than that, all the other four spots seem to be up in the air right now. In the AFC, you know, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, New York and New England, I think all look fairly solid as far as candidates to make the playoffs. But then you got surprise teams like KC and Jacksonville who are leading divisions. Can they hold up? We'll have to see. I mean, I expect a late charge from Indianapolis. I expect them to push to get into the playoffs. I really don't know what the playoffs would be like without Peyton Manning. It's been so long since he hasn't been in there.
I got a feeling we're going to find out.
But I expect San Diego to make a move too, and to continue to try and push towards making the playoffs. So these races are going to get tighter and tighter as we get closer and closer down the stretch. And, you know, we're going to have to keep our eyes on some of these up and coming teams, because we don't know how they're going to respond to the playoffs. I mean, they could respond like the Jets did last year, where they had a nothing to lose attitude, because they really didn't have anything to lose. Last year, the Jets snuck into the playoffs, you know, and were able to, you know, hold it down and win some games on the road and get to the AFC Championship game. Who's to say a KC can't do that? Who's to say Jacksonville can't do that? So, you know, we got about 90 seconds left. Phil T's with us. D-News with us. So we're going to throw out our parting shot. So, you know, this is where y'all kind of give those last minute, you know, little shout outs to somebody or something that's going on in the world of sports. So I'm going to kick it to our guest, D. Newell, and let him do his thing. Give his shout out real quick.
I don't call grown men delicious. That's it.
Don't do it. Wise words were never spoken. Go ahead, D.
I'm just going to say this. When y'all hear about Harbaugh coming to Michigan, just know you heard it here on The Real Sports Guys. Amazing Blue Draws out. It's about to go down in the big house.
So you heard it here first, Real Sports Guys. Amazing Blue is coming back. Harbaugh going to Michigan. PTI didn't drop that.
ESPN didn't drop that. Around the Horn didn't drop that. Dan Patrick didn't drop that. We dropped that. Real Sports Guy. Renegade Radio. Holler at us. Real guys talking real sports. Catch you next week. Peace. All right, and we wrapped.
Yeah, we're about to start talking about Bruce Bowen's bow tie. That boy got some of the craziest bow ties. I was like, I look back, that bow tie was all up in the screen. I'm like, damn, Bruce.
Yeah, man. And from what from the stories I've heard people talk about it, he's pretty serious about his bow ties. Like, if you come at him about his bow tie being fake, he's going to get in your face.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, he really ties, though. I'm gonna bring his ass
a
bean pie. I see him.
They look like an FOI out there.
Yeah, I'm gonna say,
food.
The last time
you
see Farrakhan.
Hey, y'all check out that 30 on 30 about the SMU program. Came out earlier this week.
Nah, man, I wanted to see it, man, and I missed it. I wanted to check it out, and I missed it.
Oh, the Pony Express, you said?
Yeah.
Oh,
that was great, man.
Man, that was a good one. You know what that got me thinking about? And Marcus, I mean, it was good. I won't ruin it for you, man, but they just talked about how corrupt that program was and how they were an average program, but then all of a sudden they get the top recruiting class and with Dickerson and Craig James and 82. And that made me think of Boise. That made me think of TCU. That made me think of these programs that, you know, traditionally haven't been powerhouses, but now all of a sudden they pull in these big-time recruits, you know. And, I'd hate to see something come out in a couple of years that really explains how they were to get them out there, and it wasn't coaching, it wasn't recruiting. But,
right.
I mean, that was the first thing I thought of. That was the first thing.
Yeah, and you got to the highest level on that one. You had the governor involved, and, who was the chairman of the board. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Free for all. I didn't know it was that bad.
Oh,
yeah, I'm
going
to have to check that out, man. Like, I like seeing that because I kind of missed college football in the 80s. It seemed like it was real nice to be a D1 athlete in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. You did not go without.
It was like Amsterdam. You can get away with anything in that bad boy.
Oh my God.
You know, like they were talking about the amount of money that was changing hands.
Yeah.
You know, I was just doing an assignment, and the average income back then was about $25,000 to $30,000.
Wow.
You know, I mean, that was considered middle class back then. So. The numbers that were being thrown around, you got to keep that in mind in 1980 whatever dollars.
Yeah.
So that makes what Cecil Newton asked for, you know, about right. when you make adjustments for inflation and all that.
Right. When you adjusted for inflation, this is the going rate for a top recruit in 2010.
$180,000.
You know, Papa Newton was probably, you know, a little perturbed at Mississippi State because they wouldn't pay that. You know, like, what do you expect us to do?
So
we're going to go to another school.
That was supposed to be for the building fund.
Right. You know, I'm just asking for what's owed, what's due. This is, I'm not asking for anything extra.
Well,
let me ask you two. You two are both fathers. If you guys were Cecil Newton, would you go, like, would you have been in New York for the high school?
I would have been in New York. I wouldn't have been at the ceremonies. I mean, that's still my son. You know, so I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there somewhere. I may not be in a hotel with him, but I'm going to be in New York. They can't stop me from coming to New York.
I'd have been up in there with a bright yellow suit.
You know, I'm coming to scout church sites. I'm trying to build a new church. We're trying to expand the congregation.
Well, hey, man, I've been reading these books. Actually, one of my colleagues up at the university, And I'll tell you about working on my dissertation, looking at athletes and sports. And so she gave me a couple books. I'm reading this book right now called Counterfeit Amateurs, An Athlete's Journey Through the 60s to the Age of Academic Capitalism by Alan Sack. He used to play at Notre Dame, and now he's a professor. And Eric Parsegian actually wrote the foreword for it. But, you know, he's part of this group of faculty who have really been questioning, you know, what's been happening with college sports. He's actually making some radical recommendations about what should happen with college athletics. So there's a group of faculty who are part of a group that have been putting all this stuff out. So we might have to have him on the show.
Hey, you know I'm always down. I think that'd be great, man. You know, I love exposing the pimping and the hoeing that goes on in college football, college sports in general. You know, that's one of my personal crusades.
No, not you, Marcus. You don't feel that way, do you?
What? That? Okay, you're being sarcastic, right?
Right.
Oh man,
the pimp gang. Yep. So yeah, I'm thinking about calling him and having him come on the show and talk a little bit about his book. But yeah, he feels like he got some changes if he wants to. You know, so he played on a pretty good team, on the championship team, I think in the mid '60s. So, but they followed it all together. So, all these years. So yeah, I think we might have to bring him on the show. Take this guy. I'm gonna get you the book. You have to get the book and read. So I think we let Marcus just moderate, just interview.
Oh okay. Yeah, I can do that. I can do that.
So I know you want to really get into it, so I'll let you do the interview for an hour. But yeah, I can't believe Phil. I don't know if you caught earlier. We were talking about the Heisman Trophy voting, and they had like 100 some guys who didn't even have Newton on their ballot. And I was saying, all those folks should lose their vote.
Yeah. No, I didn't hear on the show, but I was thinking something similarly when I was watching it last weekend. And, I'm just glad he won, because there was a split second there before they announced that he won. I was thinking to myself, you know what? If they find a way not to give this to him, this is going to be like back in the, 88 Seoul Olympics, 92, whenever it was, when they took that gold away from Roy, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a split second there. I'm like, you know what? This is going to be crazy if they say another name that does not start with Cam.
They say any other name that doesn't sound like Cam Newton, there's going to be some shit up in there.
Tupac may have had to come out of hiding on that one. I mean, really.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's amazing that how, again, like, I question the NCAA's motives in clearing him so quickly, but damn it, he cleared. And as long as he's cleared, then you got to treat him as if you would treat anybody else.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Once he's cleared, he's eligible. If he's eligible, damn it, he had the best season, hands down. You know, ain't no arguing that.
Not even close. Even the people who said they put him on the ballot didn't argue because he wasn't, you know, the best player. They was talking about this thing called principle.
And see, again, that's the type of stuff that pissed me off right there. You, like, everybody getting money. Everybody got their hand out. All y'all getting money. Y'all want to talk about principles and values and morals and all of this stuff. But all y'all is making money off these kids, man.
How much was Muschamp? Was he making, like, over $1 million as a top assistant?
Yes.
Man, who makes $1 million as an assistant coach?
Man, USA Today, man, USA Today, they do the annually, they put out the salaries of the coaches going to a bowl. Man, the money some of these coaches make. And then even when you compare it to other schools, like, you know what I'm saying, you look at Urban Meyer, who was making $4-5 million, and you look at the coach at the University of Buffalo getting $300,000 a season. Like,
wow.
That's crazy. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy. There's really a system of haves and have-nots. And, you know, like, I understand why whoever the empty suit from Ohio State came out saying that, nah, Boise State and them, they don't belong. They don't get to play with us. I understand why he said that to a certain extent after looking at those salaries. The major schools put way more money into it. They take this shit way more serious than some of these smaller schools when you look at how much they pay their coach, man. Like, I understand a little bit better why he was like, nah, y'all don't get to belong in this. Like, we put money into this. We doing something different with this money over here. We getting money over here, and we putting it back into the program. We, you know what I'm saying? And y'all not getting this kind of money. Y'all need to go play at the little kids' table. Basically is what he told him, man. Y'all get to eat at the little kids' table. When y'all start paying some bills, y'all come to the big kids' table. And that's really what it boils down to at this point. Because there's really no reason a Boise State shouldn't be able to play for a national championship in some way, shape, or form. So they, you know, put their toe in that eeny, meeny, miny, mo game. Anyway, they should be able to do that. But they can't. Because why? They haven't bought into the system. And that's what it is. You got to buy in. And what I mean by buy-in is you got to start to put that money into your program. You got to start to generate enough revenue where you're valuable to other schools, other conferences, other entities. And until you start to make yourself valuable and viable on that big scale, they're not trying to play with you. It really is a system of have and have-nots, man.
And that was, you know, you're talking about Gordon G, the most powerful guy in higher education. I mean, he's one of the most powerful two or three people in higher ed as a president. I mean, when he talks, people listen. And, you know, so for him to make that statement, that was a big statement to make because of his influence and his reach. But it's, you know, he kind of said, he kind of put it out there in a way that somebody had the courage to kind of just put it out there. You know, and, but that's the name of the game, man. You know, I'm going to be spending, you know, probably the next few years researching this stuff. So I'm glad we talk about it on the show because I'm about to bring some voices into this. I'm about to bring the academy into the real sports guy. It's where the 40-ounce meet with a 40-ounce meet the Chablis. we're gonna try and bring this together. We're going to try to create that space. You know, Stephen A. used to do that when he was on ESPN. He had a little round table. He always had a PhD up in that thing. So I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, Stephen A. You know, he had a brother from Akron doing a PhD and blah 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 talking junk. I was like, okay, yeah. So we going to bring that all up in here. Let somebody just, you know, have a conversation. My boy gave me another name. Of a brother down at Central Florida who's been doing research in this area. So I might see if we can get him on. So, you know, let's get in deep. If you want to, Marcus, let's get in deep. Let's do a series.
Hey. You know I'll put it together. You know, I get on it right away.
We do a series. We get some drops, some quotes, we get some statistics, and we can just let this thing fly. You know, because, you know, if anybody else going to put it out there, we might as well use the airways to have this discussion.
Hell, man, we could do that over the summer, man, when it gets slow with baseball.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's the one place we got to work on our game because we don't got as much strength in baseball. I used to know a lot about baseball. I just ain't got the time to keep up with it. It's good. Phil give us a little bit of backdrop on it. I'm like,
I don't even keep up with it as much as I used to, man. It's, you know, for a lot of reasons you mentioned last summer, Marcus. You know, it's just, I don't know. It just doesn't appeal to us anymore. you know, think about it growing up. A lot of African Americans played baseball. I mean, man.
Yeah.
You got to be hard pressed now to watch the playoffs now and see an African American person out there. Now, you might see some black people, but, you know, you notice they hitting home runs. They're not really getting interviewed, you know. So,
right.
That's why it's kind of odd to watch the Phillies and you see Howard, he's an African American, Rollins, African American. You know, I mean, that's a lot nowadays.
Yeah.
You have the brother down in Atlanta, the catcher. He's African American, right?
Catcher in Atlanta.
They got Hayward down there.
Hayward, a first baseman.
Yeah, they got Hayward.
Oh yeah, yeah. Hayward is absolutely yeah, yeah. You know, but they're doing some things. You know, that whole RBI initiative. I'm sure you guys have heard of it. Revitalizing baseball in inner city. But, man, you look at these teams, what they've been doing in Latin America in terms of putting money, putting baseball schools together there. I mean, they do it for greedy reasons, in my opinion. You know, you can sign somebody at 16 for 4 or 5 years, you know, at a $100,000 signing bonus, if that. You know, where if you sign a high school kid here, I mean, you know, that's not going to fly, a top 10 kid. So, you guys see that movie, Sugar?
Yeah, I seen that, man. It's a good movie.
Oh, my goodness. That right there, man, puts everything in perspective. I think that was a great story.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It is a good story, man. It was a really good movie, man.
So what was it about? I didn't see it.
I can't remember. I think the guy was from the Dominican. Or I can't remember where he was from.
Yeah.
But it was about a Latin American player who had come here. You know, he had, you know, shown himself to be talented in his country. He had come here. It just kind of followed his whole story of trying to get to the major leagues. He didn't make it, but then it showed kind of he just ended up in this community in New York of other guys who didn't make it, you know, other Latin American baseball players who didn't make it, just like playing City League baseball. You know, but these are all guys who have been signed or were on pro teams, in farm system programs, and they just didn't make it through the program. They just didn't make it, you know. And a lot of it was because of the language, the culture, being away from home. You know, it's a different world, and it's a lot of pressure and feeling like you're being used and just a lot of things going on for these young cats. Trying to find their way in a different country.
That's what Isaac Guillen was saying, that, you know, for some of the Japanese players and players coming from Asia, they provide them with all these interpreters, all the support. He said for Latin American players, they provide them with any of that stuff. That's what he was talking about.
The guy was in the States for weeks. And, you know, when he first got there, he knew a handful of guys that he had been in baseball school with and the Dominican, but then they leave. This guy is going to Denny's every day ordering eggs because that's the only thing he can say.
Eggs and French toast.
You know, I mean, that's the only thing. I mean, this guy is eating eggs every meal at Denny's because that's the only thing he can order. That's the only thing he knows how to say. You know? They interviewed Robinson Cano because I think he was one of the contributors as well as Sammy Sosa in terms of getting the project off the ground. And I think the character was designed after a bunch of different players, kind of like He Got Game. But Robinson Cano was one, you know, like that was one of the people that the character was designed after. And they, you know, he was talking about his experience, and it was somewhat similar to that. I mean, it was just really, really, you know, something that we don't hear about a lot.
I think, you know, I think that's definitely some elements I love to add into our show and have those kind of conversations and provide that forum for those conversations to happen, because where else are you going to have them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, put that realness out there, you know, we can talk about this stuff. You know, that's the underbelly. That's real sports guy. We get to the underbelly of sports. You know, we're gonna turn back the sheets. You know, we like a lot. We love the game. We love the big plays, but we want that underbelly. I definitely got belly. So.
Yeah. Well, guys, I'm gonna get going. Thanks for having me on. Always nice to get on with you guys every so often.
Well, it's good. And join us again next week, my man.
For sure, man. And hey, congratulations on them exams, man. Enjoy your break.
Thank you much, sir. Thank you much. All right, take care, fellas.
Yeah.
Take care. All right,
man. Y'all take care.
All right, peace.
Peace.